Welcome back to a Tuesday edition of The Drive. The Major League Baseball season heating up, the trade deadline right around the corner, and then the playoff race will be in full effect. So got the pleasure now to catch up with none other than Michael Cerami of BleacherNation.com, publisher, editor, grand poobah, governor. I don't know what we're going with, Michael, but he's my boss, too. And we're going to chop it up and talk some Cubs and talk Major League Baseball broadly as well. We got a lot of different fans that listen to the program, Michael, as you can understand. Yeah, even Cardinal fans tune in. But thanks for being here. How are you?
Good. I like Grand Poobah. We can go with that.
All right. We will go with that. nice win for the Cubs last night, 7-3 against the Cardinals. I mean, every win against the Cardinals is nice, but not all wins are built the same. And for me, long story short, I felt like that was just what the doctor ordered type of game when you get four hits from Nico Hoerner and Alex Bregman.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you look across the league, maybe it's a little too early to be scoreboard watching quite so intently, but a lot of National League teams lost yesterday, including some of the Cubs' biggest competition in the wild card race, as well as the division leading Brewers. And more importantly, with the trade deadline approaching and a lot of congestion just right at the top of those standings outside of the Cubs, at least in the wild card race, it's good to see those teams lose. Potentially a few, you know, less aggressive buyers, because we do expect the Cubs to be fairly aggressive here at the deadline. And I think this team has proven that they deserve a nice addition.
To be, I guess, somewhat charitable to the Cardinal fans that listen to the program, you think they'll be buyers? They're 1.5 games back now in the wild card race.
You know, a lot of times these races are not about the absolute distance from a slot, rather than how many teams they have to overcome to get there. But here's the truth. There's still three more games against the Cubs in this series alone, and then there's another series coming up in August. So they have plenty of time to make up ground. It's just that, you know, ahead of them are the Cubs, the Phillies, the Pirates, the Diamondbacks, and the Nationals. And so that's already, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams ahead of them, three of them for the one spot. And so it's just... that's the part that's tricky. I think it's also tricky that the Cardinals didn't expect to be quite as good as they are this year. I mean, obviously, they sold a lot in the offseason. So I think coming into the season, they were probably planning on selling at the deadline. Now, you know, I could see a soft buy being perfectly defendable, give yourself a chance to stay in the race, especially because they moved up so many of those more valuable pieces over the offseason. So I don't think it's out of the question. And again, I think these next three games will actually inform a lot of their decisions. Yeah. If the Cubs find a way to win then two out of the next three, well, the Cardinals' path will get a lot tougher. It just will. But, you know, the opposite can happen. The Cardinals can go on a run. And again, there's a lot of games left. So, yeah, I think we got to ask that question again 3 days from now, and we'll have a much better answer. But as things stand today, if the deadline was tomorrow, I could see a soft buy for the Cardinals without question.
Yeah, the fluidity of trade deadline dynamics in this newer wild card era are absolutely wild to try to wrap your head around as it's unfolded year by year now. I think I saw this on X earlier today where the prediction market, Kalshi, has Pete Crow Armstrong now is the NL MVP favorite. Can we just start saying that? Pete Crow Armstrong, NL MVP favorite?
He's certainly close. I mean, listen, if Shohei doesn't start pitching again, which, you know, TBD, they sat him down before the All-Star break. He missed the All-Star game as a pitcher, and then he scratched his first start after that. Then they tried to get him on the mound. It didn't quite go well. It's possible, and I think that the narrative is sort of on PCA side because, frankly, what Ohtani has already provided as a pitcher this year is still insane. Even if he doesn't pitch another inning, it's like, you know, we've gotten a little too used to that, I think. But I think people will be hungry for a non-Ohtani MVP winner, and therefore if PCA kind of continues on the track he's been on and continues to, you know, provide such outsized value with his glove that it could kind of rival some of those innings that Ohtani has provided, then it's more than fair to say PCA is, know, a favorite. But I don't think we're there yet because for all we know, a couple more weeks, Ohtani's back on the mound, finishes strong, and then it is a very hard argument for me. I love BCA, but when a guy's doing what Ohtani does on both sides of the ball, that is like just the definition of most valuable, no matter how you define it. So as long as he stays off the mound for most of the rest of the season, I'll give it to PCA if he can keep it up. But otherwise, we're going to have to wait a little bit, I think.
Because you put it on the record, I want it on the record as well. I'm sure I've already had it on the record, but just for the sake of being thorough, I also love PCA. Michael Cerami, BleacherNation.com, our guest right now on this Tuesday edition of The Drive. Michael, one thing that came to mind recently for me was, I think I can speak for most people here, as a kid, as a baseball fan, you kind of fall in love with the idea of certain players that your team could trade for. I think famously, thinking back on my childhood with the Cubs, Jake Peavy was one of those guys. Brian Roberts from the Orioles was another one of those guys. And you become an adult, and of course, you know, you kind of stop doing some of those things because, you know, it never came to fruition. So why waste your time? But I think there's some good, of course, in doing some of those things, again, as an adult, or continuing to, or picking them back up. And I say all that to say that I really like Reed Detmers, the pitcher from the Angels, Emerson Hancock from the Mariners, and I really like the idea of Josh Hader in a Cubs uniform. Those are like my selfish childhood, I guess call it, trade deadline targets, and I'm putting you on the spot here, but do you have any that would fall in like a same category where you're like, if we could set aside the likelihood, the reality of it, here's a guy I really like?
Well, if we're going totally bonkers off the wall, it's like, bring me Mason Miller, but I don't think anyone's going to be happy about the price tag it takes to acquire him.
Yeah.
I do think I can answer more specifically, though. One, I think you nailed it with Josh Hader, because I actually think he's kind of an under the radar target for the Cubs for a few reasons. One, obviously the Craig Counsell prior connection that just always seems to smooth things over. So, okay, fine, check that box. Two, the Cubs and the Astros made a ton of deals over the last few years, including for some relievers. And the Cubs also often, and the Astros reciprocate, seem to target a lot of the same players, or when one team, you know, DFAs a guy, the other team picks it up. And I think it's because their front offices, which actually broke off similar trees in the not-so-distant past, have a lot of similar references when it comes to the, not just the analytics that they use, but the actual biometric data of certain players and profiles. So when that happens, there tends to be a lot of alignment organizationally, and that makes trades a little bit easier. Another thing is Hader's actually making a lot of money, and so that kind of makes things a little bit easier, assuming the Cubs are serious about saying, hey, no, we don't have any restrictions on money, relatively speaking, at the deadline. If we get the right player for the right deal, we will pay for it. Because not every team can afford to do that midseason. That's kind of one of the advantages of being in a big market, or it's supposed to be. And lastly, he comes with multiple years of control, which I also think really makes a lot of sense for this team. Every time we've talked about a starting pitcher, I've always, you know, leaned towards the controllable guys, even if it costs more, because at the end of the season, as we know, the Cubs are going to lose Matthew Boyd, Shota Imanaga, Jameson Taillon is already gone, David Peterson, and then Cade Horton's going to miss all of next year, and Colin Ray might also be gone, depending on what they do with his club option. So bottom line, the Cubs are going to need controllable pitching on the starting side. The same is sort of true on the relief side, because this team is still going to be built to win next year. A lot of the core players are still coming back. And so you're going to want a guy like Hader, and this might just be the only opportunity to acquire him. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a pretty big swing. I don't know if it's going to happen, but we'll see. I do think that I think it would be premature to count the Cubs out on really any starting pitcher, and I think that even includes Skubal. I didn't used to think that. The logic makes very little sense. But from what I understand, that is a pitcher that they've targeted, and it's a guy that does like the Cubs. So I wouldn't be entirely setting that aside, though it does seem likely that some other teams would be more willing to make a deal for Skubal, like the Brewers, the Rays, the Yankees, the Dodgers. But you nailed a lot of the other guys, and it's the cost control guys that have the most value to me, like Reed Detmers, his teammate Jose Soriano, Emerson Hancock of the Mariners, Joe Ryan of the Twins, Sandy Alcantara, now that the Marlins have lost a ton of games in a row. I wouldn't be surprised if the Cubs try to do some of their long-term rotational buying that they're going to need to do for next season at this deadline, because they cannot possibly accomplish it all in one offseason. So that's sort of the way I look at it. The controllable guys have to be the priority, and then if someone otherwise falls into your lap, like Freddie Peralta or, there's a million. I did a whole ranking of all the guys. So Freddie Peralta, Clay Holmes, those sorts of players, you know, rental starting pitchers that are having either good or, you know, slightly checkered seasons for one reason or another. Holmes had an injury. Freddie Peralta hasn't been great in New York, but, you know, look at what happened when David Peterson came over to Chicago. So, you know, I think that could work out too. And he obviously also has the Craig Council connection. So that's the collection of arms. I would say that without a doubt, the Cubs are coming away with a starter this week, and I will be shocked if they don't. I think if they're going to swing big, though, it's going to be for someone controllable, more likely than one of the more expensive rental starting pitchers.
One other thing with the trade deadline, and I find this somewhat fascinating. You know, there was the trade between the Red Sox and the Nationals that was, call it, you know, an old baseball trade, major league player for major league player. I'm not sure, even in this day and age with all the reporting, instant information, it still feels like nobody can predict those particular trades. Like, they're most always going to be quite surprising. So this is kind of like defeats the purpose of asking the question, I guess, prefacing it this way. But can we rule out the Cubs engaging in something that would, you know, be a baseball trade?
I mean, you nailed it. It's like these are the most impossible things to predict. But I do think that there's at least a few players that fit the mold. And that's obviously Matt Shaw, though he's injured. I think he still has a lot of value. I think it would be a shame, really, to trade him right now, just because right before he got injured and hurt his wrist, he actually made some meaningful improvements at the plate, not just in terms of his results, but he was swinging harder and making harder contact on account of that. So I'm a little curious still to see him do that. But he's been hurt a lot, and so that's something to keep in mind. And then there's Pedro Ramirez, and it's like, boy, what a revelation that guy has been. And all of a sudden, in the Matt Shawless world where he's hurt, you're like, do we really have to trade him? And it's like, it comes down to the fact that there are not a ton of starting position player positions open on the Cubs in the near future. And also, the Cubs' AA and AAA top prospects are all of the positional variety, save one, really, maybe one or two. Mm-hmm. And so with a guy like Pedro Ramirez, sure, he has some value, but if he's not going to start every day, you might be leaking some of that value by not cashing in on him as a trade chip. Now, if the Cubs were to trade either Matt Shaw or Pedro Ramirez, you are absolutely positively 100% going to be getting a cost-controlled mid to front end starter in return. That doesn't mean a one-for-one swap. You know, maybe there's more to be added depending on which guy that is, but you are not trading those guys for a rental, full stop. It just would be very hard for me to believe that would happen. Rentals don't usually fetch that much. And again, I mean, unless they go crazy and trade them for Skubal, there's no one out there that's remotely close to equal in value. But look at what the Red Sox just did with the Nationals. That was sort of a similar trade, right? And so the value of cost-controlled young hitters with some pedigree is high. It's a cost-controlled front-end type starting pitcher. So I don't think it's out of the question, and I do think the Cubs would be silly to make anyone untouchable outside of, you know, they're pitchers. Like, Cade Horton, even if he wasn't hurt, he's not being traded. It's just too much value. And so I do think it's possible. You know, frankly, I think this team has shown, I know they still have a big gap in the division, but boy, have they been playing good baseball for about 2 months now, almost, right? And not just winning a lot of games, but winning games convincingly. And then most importantly, they have far and away the best defense and the top five offense.
Yeah.
And although the bullpen has struggled at times, it's starting to come around. You expect that they'll get another reliever at the deadline, and then there are guys like Hunter Harvey and Daniel Fuencia coming back. Ben Brown, Justin Steele can contribute in the bullpen, so on and so forth. So it really comes down to the starting pitching, and you're like, are you really going to leave this team that is just such an excellent collection of position players in all facets of the game without a rotation to match it heading into the postseason? I think that would be a shame.
Yeah.
So I do hope the Cubs do something big, and I don't think anyone would be off limits. Again, most of the starters on the team are either recently extended, soon to be free agents, or have no trade clauses. So Ian Happ's not going anywhere. Seiya Suzuki's not going anywhere. There's no way the Cubs are trading Carson Kelly, Alex Bregman, Nico Hoerner, Jesse Swanson, all guys that are signed. They don't have a replacement for Michael Bush, and he's controlled. Like, none of those guys will be dealt. I just find that very hard to believe. But the Pedro Ramirez's, the Matt Shaw's, the Kevin Alcantara's, Moises Ballesteros, all guys who've been on the big league team, I think that they absolutely could be dealt and are probably being discussed by the collection of executives at 1060 West Addison as we speak.
Oh, man. I think it'll be mostly fun here, what unfolds for the trade deadline. And, of course, can't wait to see how it ends up. And, Michael, before I let you go, thinking about Bleacher Nation Bears and Luis, and just you're not a newbie around here on the program. And, of course, you know, P1 listeners, they know that I'm on the Bleacher Nation team now. But I don't think they know everything that the website offers. I try to remind them of that when it comes up from time to time. But most NFL teams reporting to their training camps today, and there's Bears coverage at BleacherNation.com. I've also seen there's a bunch of really cool fantasy features rolling out, and there's always sports betting insight. Anything else you'd like to add for our audience, knowing that, hey, it's not just Cubs at Bleacher Nation?
No, absolutely. So our Blackhawks coverage, which is led by Tab Bamford, is really excellent. He's kind of breaks the mold of most of us who are considered outsiders. Tab is an insider. He goes to every game. He's in the clubhouse. He's at all the meetings and events. He literally wrote the book on Connor Bedard's rookie season, followed him around the whole year. So I would definitely check out our Blackhawks content. And then now, to be honest, the Bulls, who have been one of the most frustrating and disappointing franchises in a while, they start to seem like they have a little bit of a hold on things with the whole new front office, coaching staff, and then a couple new first-round draft picks that are looking real good. So, yeah, we cover the Cubs, the Bears, the Bulls, and the Blackhawks very in-depth, and then we cover the rest of their individual leagues, NBA, NHL, NFL, closely as well. But we really hit it all. We try to hit it all objectively, but also, as fans, because I think that there's a lot of value to be gained in that. And we like to have, in-depth analysis. We don't try to keep things surface level. We try to go deep. So you know that as well as anybody. And I do hope anyone listening comes and checks it out.
Well, thanks, Michael. Appreciate the time. And, of course, we'll be in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot, Cole.
Michael Cerami, BleacherNation.com, kind enough to join us for a healthy Cubs and baseball conversation on this Tuesday edition of The Drive. All right, let's take this time out. We'll get your Radio Iowa Sports. Come back on the other side. Got a bunch of audio to get to from this morning's UNI men's basketball open practice that I talked about at the top of the show. That's next right here on The Fan.